Here on Outwork with the Ready, we use Slack to collaborate on nearly every part of making the show.
It's where we share research, talk about listener questions, and plan future episodes. That's because Slack is the AI-powered platform where work happens. It's a place for teams of all sizes to come together so they can be more productive, organized, and creative.
Plus, it adapts to our workflow, not the other way around, offering everything from messaging to audio clips. And for the times we really need to sync up on the finer points of something, Sam and I can jump right into a huddle for FaceTime. No scheduling required.
Now, if only recording our show was that easy.
Right? So whatever you're trying to grow, do it faster and easier with Slack.
Learn how at slack.com.
I'd rather you like overreached a little bit and had to be reined in. And,
yes.
And that's the vibe of this group. And I would love to see more teams really being like, not like I'm going to question the structure, I'm going to question the practice, but I'm going to like lean so much into the practice that I almost fuck it up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is Brave New Work, a podcast about reinventing our organizations and the search for a more adaptive and human way of working. I'm Aaron Dignan, and I'm joined by my co-host, Rodney Evans.
Hello, everyone.
On today's episode, we're going to talk about rock bands and video games. But before we get into that surprising set of topics, let's check in.
Let's check in, because we always check in. Why do we check in?
So that we
can get present, so we can start on time, so we can learn more about each other, so that we can have equal airtime, and so that we can learn answers to prompts like this one. If you were stranded with a group in the wild, whoa, this is so funny. What would your role mix look like?
I would probably be kicked out by the group immediately for suggesting that we all establish a role mix.
I would be like, shut up.
Yeah, exactly. Get out of here, nerd. No, I think, you know, I would probably be very interested in like the rescue plan. So some other people might be building shelter. They might be like foraging. Those are things that I probably would skip. And I would be like, I'm going to work on like, where the hell are we? And what are our best chances for being found? So anybody that wants to work on that, come join me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, unsurprisingly, it would probably be much more of like community management. Like
little,
while you're like
moderation,
looking externally and figuring out like how we're gonna leave, I think I would be like, okay, let's decide, you know, what are the jobs to be done? How do we prioritize those things? How do we staff them? What does the schedule look like so that we don't all die while we're waiting for the rescue plane?
I love it. All right. Well,
that very much tracks with like our archetypal roles in general. Yeah.
And also, I think the group would be lucky to have us.
I mean, was there ever any question? There's a reason that we're saving up for a commune.
So anyway, today's topic is everything I needed to know about org design I learned from playing music or video games. And I guess I want to start by asking you, as one half of this equation, what sparked this? Like, how did this idea come to you?
Yeah. So it's actually, I think you're going to find this amusing. So I decided recently that I needed to start playing more music again, because I haven't really been playing. For those who don't know, I'm a classically trained cellist. I started playing when I was 6. It was a very big part of my identity as a young person. I nearly became a professional cellist, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I decided recently that I wanted to start playing music more, and I looked on Craigslist, as one does, and I found this group of people who, as it turned out, were like about my age and live like 10 minutes away and play every other Sunday and were very excited for me to join them. And then I had a completely harrowing experience of actually doing that, the start of which, and I swear to God, this is true story. As I was leaving, first of all, Ed was like, just have fun. Like, don't be nerd. Just have fun. And I was like, literally, I don't, those words just like mean nothing to me right now. I'm like
in
full blown fucking panic. And secondly, I almost called you in the car on my way there to be like, how do I be in a band? I was just like, I got so in my head about having to do this thing in a totally different way that I was apoplectic.
I love it.
And then what I realized is there's like actually a lot of parallel between this whole experience and what we do for a living. What about you?
Completely agree. Yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, it's worth noting that before I figured out how to do anything else, I also played music. I was not classically trained or nearly professional, but I did play in a lot of bands. And when I did sort of arrive in the world of organizations and business, it was surprising to me how useful some of those skills were. But the experience I've had as an adult is actually going to something that I also was not as familiar with, which was like getting into these multiplayer games and battle royale games on the PlayStation. I had an old friend that I met when we were in fourth grade ring me up a few years ago and be like, you're getting a PlayStation and we're going to get back in touch and here's how we're going to do it. And I'm going to show you around. And the whole time that I was getting shown around this world of gamers, I was like, whoa, there is something org designy going on here that you would not expect. And there's some really, for all the bad press that it gets about toxicity and all this, there's actually some really healthy stuff going on as well. So yeah, I was excited to cross-pollinate these two hobbyist spaces and see what we can learn from them. So maybe start by maybe you sharing like what jumped out to you right away in terms of those similarities and what were some of the like first major patterns?
Yeah. So the first thing that jumped out to me was that in this situation, I behaved exactly like one of our clients at the beginning. So this group of people that I'm playing with, like they jam. They don't have written music. They don't have a set list of songs. They have a Dropbox of like 80 charts that just have lyrics and chord names, and that is it. And yeah. So the parallel here is when we go into a working environment, especially as we work with a lot of executives, a lot of them are very accustomed to going into a room, having fully prepared, having like their PowerPoint deck and their talking points and their script ready to go, and then just sort of like delivering, like stand and right. deliver and like right. fucking nail it. Don't fuck
Concerto
it up.
Concerto number like, nine.
Do what you practiced and you'll be safe. And to be honest, that's how classical music is. So right. in classical music, the way that it is written down, it is incredibly detailed. You know, as I said, I'm a cellist. So there are bowings, there are recommended fingering patterns, there are dynamics, there are tempos written, every single note is written. There's no riffing. You just learn to play the thing. And then when you show up to quartet or chamber orchestra or a symphony or whatever, you just fucking play your thing. Like right. you follow the
Do
conductor,
your part.
But what the conductor is doing is going, this is where we are, play your fucking thing. which to me is, it's very much complicated. Like it's not easy to learn to
right,
play that
right, right.
thing.
No,
it's
an incredibly
difficult thing to do, but nothing really surprising happens, period.
Right.
Like, you know, sometimes like the timpanist will like drop a drumstick or something like that. Like accidents happen, but there's nothing emergent really.
Right. That happens. Right. Like the best performance is the one that is most expected. That's like everything was exactly as it should be.
No flautist just like stands up and like takes eight bars.
Ron Burgundy's all over the room.
During foray. You know, it's like that's not how it goes. And so it felt like this incredibly apt parallel where every part of me wanted to be able to like prepare and practice and study so that I could show up and nail it. And there is no way to do that.
Yeah.
And even when I tried to like listen to their music and like start to think about what cello parts would sound like the way that they have the tablature is almost all of it is transposed into different keys. So like there's literally so little prep that can be done. There's just these like very like loose containers that you have to show right. up and be in. And it freaked me out so bad because like jam bands are fucking complexity and like orchestras are complication. And I was not ready. I was not ready to make that leap. And
That's
I was just
great.
Like, man, this is how people feel that I work with probably.
Yeah. Yeah. It is funny. I had a similar instinct with the gaming. So just, I guess, as backdrop for anyone listening that has not played a battle royale game or a team-based
one.
So
you can tell me about that.
What happens is that they build a lobby of you and your friends playing together in duos or trios or quartets. They build a lobby of 100 people, let's say, give or take, and they drop you all into a little map, a little virtual world. And as a team, you are fighting with usually some form of like tasers or guns or weapons or whatever. And whatever team is the last team standing wins. Like that's the game. And so it can take anywhere from 10 to 25 minutes to find out who that team is.
Okay.
And what you decide and how you collaborate is going to determine whether you win or lose at all. And if it's like a fast, immediate, you know, death for everyone on the team, or if something really goes right. And one of the things that I struggled with, similar to what you just said, is out of the gate, I was like, okay, I want to win, which is an instinct, like a kind of an older business instinct, right? Like I want to dominate. So what is our strategy and what's our exact plan? And like, where are we going to land? What's the best place to land? Should we land here or should we land there? And like trying to overthink it. And as we got paired with better and better players and even some pro players who make more than I make in a year playing video games, which is ridiculous and amazing. They were so nonchalant about that. It was just like, where do you want to land? And like, wherever, dude, wherever you want. Like, it doesn't matter. Just, you know, just pick a spot. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What if we land at the edge, we can work our way to the center and da, 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 da. That's not how they operate. How they operate is in a sense and respond orientation. And they're good enough that it doesn't matter where they land. Mm-hmm. It's like asking McEnroe playing tennis against me, what's your strategy going to be? It's like, my strategy is going to be to beat the shit out of him. It doesn't matter which shot I choose.
My strategy is going to be to show up that day.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we're good.
Yeah. And so what I learned quickly was like, there's a different set of skills that are valued. And it's not this kind of like planning skill.
Totally. Totally. And, you know, the planning thing, I think for me, and tell me if this tracks for you, but like, I understand it's, even though in our work, we are every single day trying to teach people to let go of this urge, the feeling that I could plan for something and therefore avoid discomfort or, you know, underperformance, or in this case, it also felt a little bit like an audition. Like I felt like I was going for the first time and they were going to tell me if I was like, welcome to come back, et cetera. And so there was really a part of my psyche that was just like, if you can't figure out a way to effectively plan for this, like you're toast basically.
Right. Right.
And then the ping ponging between that and like, there's actually not really a way to plan for this.
Right.
Was just like, really difficult. And it was funny because I found, and you know, we've talked on this show before about like avoidance mechanisms, and I sort of like watched my brain do all of them and was like, maybe, you know, these guys play every 2 weeks, and I was like, maybe I won't go this Sunday and I'll like wait for a couple Sundays, and then it was like, maybe rather than that, I'll just like try like really listening to all of the music. And it was like, I did all of these things that was just to like stave off the discomfort of jumping into a situation where I was really uncertain and really worried. And so it was just like that also, it was interesting to watch my ego do all of that work of like, okay, you have an identity about being an excellent musician, and this context is really challenging that identity. So like, here's a bunch of strategies and tactics for you to like not actually have to deal with this discomfort so that you can maintain this identity of being an excellent musician. And like none of them worked, you know?
Yeah, that's so cool. There's a quote going around on Twitter right now about, and I forget who to credit it to, so I apologize. Maybe we'll hit it in the show notes, but it's something along the lines of like, people don't fear change, they fear loss.
Yeah.
And so, right? And so it's like, it isn't change that's the problem. It's like, you don't want to lose your identity as I'm good at this.
Of course.
And so that's a certain kind of threat.
Yeah, it is the loss of this like image. And I think the other thing that was interesting for me to like observe for myself is how these, you know, someone, I think it was actually Gareth who's been on the show and who you and I have both worked with. I think it was him who explained this thing to me, and I don't know if I've ever said it here before, but like we were talking about trauma, and basically what he said was like, when you've had, and I'm sorry, Gareth, if you're listening to this and I totally butcher what you told me, but you know, it stuck for a lot of years. When you've experienced real trauma that's like deep in you, then if you have an experience that even reminds you very lightly of that trauma, like all of the feelings and severity of the original trauma, like immediately
right
are present.
They're back. So hello.
It's like, even if you get a whiff of a thing, you're just oh no, I'm back. So I'm only saying that as preamble because truly Sunday morning jam band, it's not like a Juilliard audition, you know, but I have a lot of trauma from being a young person in this incredibly competitive environment. And like a lot, it was a lot of pressure. Like I was under a lot of pressure from ages 6 to 22 to do this thing with excellence. And honestly, even as a kid, like there was a lot riding on it. Like there was a lot riding on my abilities financially and in terms of scholarships and in terms of access to certain things. It didn't feel like a hobby much. It really felt like this pretty high stakes thing. And so it was also just really interesting to me that like truly as I was leaving here, like nearly hyperventilating and on my way over there, I was like, oh, this is that thing where like I am in the car with this fucking cello going to this place to play music where I feel like I need to perform. And even though the context is completely different, it's bringing up all of this like 20 years of history that doesn't really belong here because like it's not really related to this thing. But like here it is.
It's a cello case and a bunch of baggage in the backseat.
Cello case is just full of childhood memories and perfectionist tendencies.
I'm glad you brought up the high stakes thing, though, because even if the stakes aren't real, but they feel high, there's a way you show up to that that's really challenging. And I found with the gaming, the fact that you're in a, what is essentially like a kill or be killed environment, even though it's pretend and cartoony and not serious.
Yeah.
It really, like, that monkey mind gets going. And like, as things start to happen, your first reaction is very fight or flighty and very like out of your control. So my first instinct as I got into this was you'd hear some, you know, skirmish going on over the hill. And I was like, let's run the other way. Like, let's get the hell out of here. Or someone would surprise you. And I would try to like abandon ship immediately. And what I learned is that there are a set of heuristics for teams and players that are good at this stuff that are essentially anti-instinct heuristics that you have to kind of like embody and memorize and like lean into. What?
I bet they're the same for like survival in life. Tell me.
One of them is that you run into action. So if as soon as you hear a leaf being stepped on, everybody converges on that thing like piranhas in the water when you drop in a piece of meat. It's just like immediate action. So as soon as you get a whiff of something, everybody goes.
Yeah.
And this is paired with a heuristic of complete and total communication, which is also a complete non-instinct. So when I first landed, I was like focused and holding my breath and not communicating and not sharing. And over time you learn, you listen to these pros and they're like, every single time they fire, they're calling out the degrees on the compass that they're shooting at, who they're seeing, how much damage they're doing, and the condition of that person's shields even. So they'll be like 45 degrees, two enemies, two hits, 35, 34 damage. And it's just like, and I'm sure you get this maybe from your team of team stays, like some of that kind of habit, but it is a constant flow of information from person to person to the point of overkill, combined with that heuristic of like, go where the action is. So the second somebody says something, everybody is whipped and hustling in that direction. And it's that level of coordination that leads to victory because everybody else is like running around trying to figure out where to put their lollipop down. And this team is like, boom, immediately taking action, decisive.
Yeah. Well, and like what that reminds me of is also like, a lot of times when we start doing work with new teams or orgs, one of the things that I say to people a lot is like, you're going to have a huge amount of cognitive load initially because you don't have unconscious competence around any of basically three levels of things going on. So at the most macro level, we are trying something that has larger order outcomes, even though they feel like small moves, whether that's like a new tool or a new meeting type or whatever. Then there's like a level below that, which is doing the actual move of using Slack or using Notion or using an action meeting or whatever. Like you're learning that move while you're trying to sort of hold this higher order effect. And then there's a more micro version of that, which is like the new language that you need to know to play. And so I'm like, you are going to always feel disoriented at the beginning of this because you don't actually have any of those three things.
Right. You don't know enough.
You don't know any of those things. And it's interesting to me because, you know, when you said that about like communicating, and there's like a principle behind that. And then you're actually also like physically playing a game. And it feels very similar to me in the music context of like, they're like the rest of the people there are like looking at the chart, looking at each other,
right,
playing the music, and they know the fucking songs, which like, I don't know like Bob Weir deep cuts. Cause like I grew up on Motown and I'm trying to like learn four levels of stuff at the same time. And that's just like, it's just hard.
I love that. Yeah. And the parallels are really strong because map knowledge is a huge thing. Mm. So the teams that have been playing for 2 or 3 years,
they already know.
So there's a game I'm not very good at that is called Rainbow Six Siege. And there are very small maps like houses, buildings, etc. There are people in the game who are like, if you stand in this pixel and you look 45 degrees north, northeast, there's a hole in the wall. And that hole leads to this other part of the map. And they can listen in their audio for like, when is someone there? There's no chance for you in an environment like that. Like you don't have, it's not like you're just going to like come in and riff and figure it out. They have, they have patterns and they have depth. And the same thing, like you said about knowing people, like the character knowledge. So there are often different characters with different strengths and weaknesses. And where I always fall down as a newbie is like knowing their names. There's like 24 of these freaking characters and people are just like, that's a bulldog at 4 o'clock. And I'm just like, wait, which one is that? I have to literally tape up a picture of these people. So I have any idea what the hell I'm doing. And I don't sound like an idiot.
Yeah, it's wild. that does bring me to one thing that I wanted to talk about, which is like when you're trying to do something new that is in a complex environment, but is coordinated with other people. What do you think about the human dynamic? Like, is it better to know the people you're coordinating with? Is it better to have them be strangers? Have you noticed certain ingredients that make that more, that coordination more possible? Like, what have you noticed? Because I definitely had some observations having played with these guys.
Yeah. No, I really want to hear your observations in the music space, because I think that is particularly important. What I've noticed is basically two phenomena that are both true. One is that having a shared objective creates a kind of a trust and an openness and a connection point between individuals, even that don't know each other, that like isn't always there if some people are just showing up to troll or to be goofing around or whatever, or they're like super duper high. Like that can be a little frustrating. But I would say like 1 out of 2 times that you get into a lobby with someone you don't know, there is a certain camaraderie there that's like, we're here to do the same thing. So let's just, like, we're all Marines, right? Like, let's just go. Mm-hmm. And what has blown my mind about that part of it, the psych safety of it and the like space of it, is that you will get teamed up with people that in regular course of life would actively kick your ass, who like would never talk to you, would never identify with you, would never collaborate with you because of where they come from or their identity or what they like and don't like or whatever. But suddenly you're just all the same. Like suddenly you're just in this place where it's like complete laughter and openness. So I think there's something there about like relationships between people that really struggle in the real world that can find some common ground there. That being said, if you actually want to win every time, the only teams that do that well are teams that play together all the time. Because to your point about the music, like the shorthand is incredible. You know each other's strengths and weaknesses. You know exactly what to expect. It's just a whole different animal. So it's like on the beginner side, you have this camaraderie. And on the pro side, you have this need for who do you practice with? So how does that map to your jam scene?
The jam scene. Well, I mean, I'm certain that over time that will totally be true, that it's just like time together doing this thing synchronously will make a big difference. And it's interesting, some of the parallels that, because mine is very much in person and like 5 feet away from, you know, human beings. I think a few things have been true for me that are kind of interesting and that I've sort of taken note of as a facilitator who's trying to get groups of people to do new things. One is these folks, it's a husband and wife host it, and then there's two other musicians that come, are like incredibly clear on what they want to be doing. So they're like, this is the time it starts. This is sort of how we roll. Like we, you know, we sort of rotate who picks the song. We rotate who sings the song, et cetera, et cetera. We are doing this for fun. We are not aiming to like play out, you know. So I think their clarity on like what they're there for was really helpful.
Container design.
Totally. The other things, though, that I really noticed were like they were incredibly welcoming, but also very low pressure. Like they were very much like, we're so glad you're here. This is so awesome that you came. And if you don't like it, don't feel obligated, et cetera, et cetera. And I was also very clearly like, look, like this is new for me. I might be fucking garbage at this. If I mess up your jam, please don't hesitate right. to not invite me back. I will be okay. Like I will recover from this. And so I think the fact that on both sides, we were like, this is casual. This is an experiment.
Right.
Like everybody was like, this is an experiment. And like, it's not going to be a big deal if it doesn't work out. And the fact that they were like so kind and so like sort of complimentary made a really big difference because, right. because the fact that my preamble was basically, I have never done this before. Like I've played with bands before in my life, but when I played with bands in the past, they had music. I wrote right. my own parts. Yep. I learned those parts. And then we like performed on stages and I played my part correctly. So I just like yeah. translated the band experience to it from like my classical training. So I really said like very openly and upfront, I was like, I don't know how to do this.
Right.
So this is like all new for me, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the fact that like I felt like I could say that out loud, be really clear that I told them I was nervous and that we all looked at it as an experiment helped a lot. But then also the fact that they were like so excited and they were like, it's so beautiful and it like it makes such a different sound. All of these things, it was like, I knew that I wasn't really playing particularly well and that I can be a lot better. And the fact that even at that very first interaction, they were so encouraging of what they were hearing rather than being like, you know, you came in wrong or like you, that wasn't your eight or whatever. They were just like, more, fucking play more, sing more, do more, be more. We want all of it. So I think that nice. Like really helped me like loosen up a little bit and kind of like lean into the experiment rather than trying to be perfect.
Yeah, I love that. And it is interesting because it's a slightly higher stakes thing for you in that environment than in the hobby that I'm describing, because you have a set of finite people that you're trying to collaborate with. And if it goes really poorly, it's not like there's 50 jam bands to choose no. from within a drive of your house, right? No. So it's a little bit higher stakes in that way. Whereas in the average lobby, you drop in 20 minutes later, you get another batch of people. There's 8 million people playing. Like
right.
you have nothing to lose by doing a bad job. And then you can start over and wipe the slate clean. And interestingly, for the teams that do practice together, there's such a debrief culture, such a test and learn culture of like, you know, we don't need to dwell on it. We don't need to be assholes to each other. We don't need to like point fingers. We can just be like, what happened? Mm-hmm. What are we not going to do again? What are we going to do again? Or was it just a case of like bad luck? And there's yeah. a lot of that too. There's a lot of lightness about like, that just didn't work out. Like we don't need to blame anybody for that. It just, we just had a bad, we ended up in the wrong spot at the wrong time and yeah. we got pinched and like that, there was yeah. nothing we were going to do about it. So let's just get back in there. I like the number of at-bats. Like it's yeah. just like more reps.
And yeah, it's interesting that you say that because like several of them were very much like, oh, I fuck up all the time. Like before we even started playing, they were like, we're here to like
right.
experiment and learn and try stuff. And like, it does not always work out. A lot of my solos do not work out, but like, this is the place where I get to try stuff in a living room, drinking coffee.
Exactly.
And so I think also that kind of clarity of like, no one is really here to flex. Everyone is here because they're trying to have a nice experience, but also workshop stuff and try stuff out was like, was very helpful clarity. And again, in the parallel to the work that we do in the world, how great would it be if teams sort of leaned into that? Like one of the things I often say to teams when I'm facilitating is I would rather that you like bumped up against the structure and I facilitated you than that you're like so leaned back and worried right. about messing up that you don't really have an experience.
Right.
So like, I'd rather you like overreached a little bit and had to be reined in. And,
yes.
And that's the vibe of this group. And I would love to see more teams really being like, not like I'm going to question the structure, I'm going to question the practice, but I'm going to like lean so much into the practice that I almost right, fucked up.
That I hit the edge.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does bring to mind for me the fact that there really are in the world of business and music and games, two cultures, ultimately, two cultures of air quotes excellence. The culture that is like humble and open and iterative and inviting and psychologically safe, and the culture that is like quite aggressive and quite unpermissive. And that definitely, I mean, in these games, there are specific games and specific lobbies where people will just be like, you're trash. Go away. Like, you're not welcome here. You're a complete idiot. They say things that I'm really not allowed to say on this podcast, even with an explicit rating, because they don't align with my values, but they will say terrible things. And you're just like, that's not a learning environment. Like, that's just right. someone with mastery who's being a dick. And then there's the exact opposite at that same level, at that same echelon. There's a set of people who are just like, it's cool. It's cool, dude. Like, next time, maybe try this. But like, you know, it's just practice. Like, been there. You just got to get those reps, you know, just like a completely different way of holding space. Yeah. And I think in business, in music, in games, in life, you kind of have to pick your team. Like, which of those are you going to be when you have mastery?
Yeah, totally. And which one gets you the better performance? It's right. like, you know, in this case, and I think this goes to a lot of what we talk about in terms of just like motivational theory and, you know, being theory why humans is like, nobody shows up to play a game or be in a meeting or go to a jam band hoping that they do a fucking terrible job. Everybody shows up to those situations wanting to do the best that they can do, unless there's something really weird going on.
Yeah.
And so it's like if the host of this jam band had been like, you know, two songs in, like, yeah, like you're not really hitting it, or like you're not really doing enough that this is additive or whatever. It's like I was already paralyzed basically with fear.
Right. I'm already there.
Someone being a shithead about it and being super critical in that moment was not going to get them or me
a better performance.
Because I was already like halfway paralyzed. Yeah. That kind of like dominance behavior was not going to motivate me. It was just going to make me like more worried than I already was.
I'm so glad you said that too, because it reminded me of one other thing that I was excited to share about this world that I don't know how to bring into the world of organizations, which is when you log in and get started, there are two different modes to choose from.
Oh.
Ranked and unranked.
Okay. What does that
unranked
mean?
Unranked is it doesn't matter what happens. Like you win or lose, draw, it doesn't affect your status in the system.
Okay.
Ranked is you lose status. You win, Ooh. You gain status. And so there are badges and credentials and leaderboards and all these things that you can like legitimately move up, but ultimately lead to going pro quite literally. But if you're an unranked, it's like, who gives a shit? And so what is really frustrating for me and for others is when someone shows up to one of those two contexts without the right headset.
Mm.
So someone shows up to ranked high and they're just completely throwing the game and you're stuck with them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, this is not that. Like, this is game time.
What are you doing here?
And then vice versa, someone that's in unranked being like so hardcore and ridiculous. And you're just like, excuse me.
Right.
There's zero reason for that attitude in here.
Right.
And it is about context and it's about like a shared purpose or a shared orientation. Like what version is this? And what I love about the jam band context is if we're in the basement having coffee, we've all agreed to the idea that this is chill time.
Yeah.
We're not on the stage at Lincoln Center.
We're not exactly. This is not for our college scholarship. We can just, you know,
everything riding on it.
We can play some Bob Dylan deep cuts and just like have a good time. One of the things that I No, so I've now been twice. I was invited back, incidentally.
They were very lovely.
And it's a funny, like, now it's sort of like a funny mutual admiration situation because they're like, only one of the people who shows up there can read music. And they're good musicians, but like, you know, they're self-taught.
Self-taught, yeah.
Musicians. And they're like, it's so amazing what you can do. And I'm like, it's so amazing what you can do.
Right,
and they're just like, they're like, no. And I'm like, but, yes. But also, yeah, like, yeah. Cause like, I can't listen to the radio and like just play along on right. three different instruments and have it sound good. And they all can do that. So in any case, one of the things that I noticed last, so I've been twice. So one of the things that I noticed last time was there's like a counterintuitive way of being with this different context. And what I mean by that is like, because I have this orientation to traditional ways of learning and performing music, where my mind went once I had been was like, okay, order of operations now is like, I listen to all of this music until I like have it enough in my head that I sort of know what's coming. I like write down probably the most common chords that I'm seeing so that I like so I can start to like form some scales in my brain, et cetera, et cetera. I sort of like had this little like plan in my mind of how I was going to do that. So I did some of that in between. I like listened to some music and I wrote down some chords and I did some stuff. And I was like, I'm going to be better. I'm going to really be better because I did this. And what I found about an hour in the last time I was there was, for whatever reason that I cannot explain to you, the way that I can actually play best is just by watching Jim. Like, I can look at the chart, read the chords there, and then if I just watch it, probably because I was in chamber music groups for such a long time that rely completely on looking at, you know, a small number of other players with no conductor.
Totally.
I actually can follow a chart much more easily and much more intuitively just by watching him, because I can like see the patterns. He plays the guitar and he sits next to me. I can like see the patterns repeating, and like I deeply understand the structure of what the written music would look like if I watched Jim. And I'm only saying that because it was like another funny counterintuitive thing of like, even after having the experience, I still defaulted to like, this is how I'm going to plan and prepare my way out of this.
Right.
And then in the room, I was like, here's a thing I've never done before that seems to be working better than any of that.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it's so weird.
I love that. And I love the idea that, I mean, first of all, you can't kind of practice your way into a reality because it's not the same thing. Like, it's,
turns out, you know,
drills are not reality. And I love the idea that both looking at or watching or observing someone, if you have kind of a master-apprentice relationship, or even just literally observing someone who has a little bit more context knowledge than you, can actually raise your level.
Yeah.
And that is something that I have found for sure, is that when I get lobbied up with really, really good people, and I am not that, the level I play at is much, much higher.
Totally.
Because I'm like a little bit drafting, you know, and not just like getting defended by them, but literally like noticing what they're doing and how they're doing it and picking up those cues.
Right.
And suddenly it's like, oh, that's how they handled that.
Right.
That's how they handled that. And you start to build up a different approach, and you're not, and it isn't necessarily there for you the next game if they're not. Like, there is a relational component to it, which is very, very cool. And I think that's true in facilitation for us as well, actually.
I do too. And what it's making me think about is like, I didn't, because I haven't said any of this out loud before, but like, I think what is happening in that moment is like, I stop orienting to what is the music and am I playing it correctly? And I reorient to like, how do I play with Jim?
Yeah, it's more relational.
And it's like, I've been playing with other musicians since I was six. I know how to, I know how to play a counterpart to someone else's part, if I can like get out of the head of like, what am I supposed to be doing here? And then also to your point, like, he is very good at jamming and he's very good at like taking his eight and soloing. And he's like all of these other things that I don't know how to do. So it's like just looking to my right and watching that person just like makes me better at it.
Yeah. I like that because it's another way of getting into flow.
Yeah.
Because effectively in all these improvisational spaces, complexity spaces, what you're really trying to do is get out of your head at
exactly.
the end of the day, right? Get out of your head, stop narrating your life and just be in the moment. And
exactly.
and it's hard to do that when you're not looking around and when you're not like in relationship with others.
Yeah.
But if you're really in it, there's no room for that. You know, you can't be simultaneously thinking like, I hope I'm doing this right, while you're actually like going back and forth with someone.
Right. Or being like, okay, A is next. So if we're moving to the A chord, then I'm going to do that. Like, it just doesn't work when you're trying to like be in the experience and be contributing to the experience, not trying to like control the experience.
Sometimes I think the work that we do at actual work is a little too slow to unlock some of that space.
Like totally.
the way that we do meetings and facilitation and decisions and things like that, they can be quite drawn out. And as a result, there's a lot of room for me to get in my head instead of just play and just be in the moment. So, and there's room because there's so many of us sometimes in a meeting, et cetera. So I think like figuring out ways to make less room for escaping into my brain is an interesting experiment for work.
That is an interesting experiment because it's, I think in those moments, it can be very easy to like optimize and over-optimize rather than just be in it and try something. That's cool.
That makes sense.
That's one of the biggest shifts, actually. That's one of the biggest shifts that I feel like I talk about with newer people to the ready. I've had two conversations this week where people were like getting lightly prepped for an internal meeting and were like, give me some ideas about, you know, what to say here or what the takeaway should be or whatever. And I was like, just go with like two prompts and trust the group, like trust the wisdom of the crowd that like something good will emerge. The thing that you're looking for will emerge and you will have the wisdom to see it when it does. You don't have to do that work by yourself in preparation and then show it to the group. You can like prompt the group, whether that's like your video game team or your jam band, and then just trust that the thing is going to show up in the room.
Yeah, love that. And I do think it's true that almost regardless of your level of mastery, if you just get into a noticing mode and you just speak really candidly with everybody, I don't care whether it's music or games or real life, just saying like, hey, it feels low energy right now. Did I do something wrong? Could I do something differently to change that?
Yeah.
It just like immediately cuts through the mustard.
Yeah.
And people will, if you have good colleagues or you have good partners, they'll immediately show up to that and be like, to your point about the wisdom of the crowd, like, you know what, you're right. Or I'm loving this. And then you feel differently. Or hey, how about we try this? And you don't have to come in with this perfect plan or be the master facilitator. You just have to come in with good noticing muscles and just play music.
Exactly.
All right. Well, that seems like a reasonable place to shut this whole thing down. Wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
As they say,
as they twirl
their finger.
This was really fun to talk about. I really enjoyed this. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it too, listeners. Leave us a review, please. We read them. We like them. We want more. Thank you.
Yes. Listeners. A quick tip of the hat to Taylor Marvin for making us sound good. Brave New Work is produced by The Ready, where we help organizations around the world change the way they work. Maybe we'll start using some instruments and controllers in the future.
Exciting.
You can get in touch with us by emailing podcast@theready.com. And as for you, thanks for listening. Now go change something.